Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you rely on the internet for everything, you need speed that can handle anything. Xfinity delivers Wi-Fi speed faster than a gig. Go online, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Restrictions apply. Gig Wi-Fi requires gig speed and compatible X-Fi gateway. Actual speeds vary, not guaranteed.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification, and they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Film study with Ken McCusick. We're going to look back at the preseason week one game, which was really the Ravens' second game, but don't get me settled on numbers and weeks. With the NFL, it's all confusing. Ken McCusick, how are you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I'm doing well. This was a fun game to watch. The Ravens clearly won 33-7. We got to see Joe. We got to see Lamar Jackson with the basically the O-line starters for some time. A lot of fun going on there, but we're not going to get to the offense today. We're going to focus on the defense today and focus on the offense on our next episode. So the defense, the defense, pretty much everyone played well on the defense, so I'm excited for you to break this down and help really explain to me who stood out, because in my eyes, everyone was looking good.
Yeah, kind of my eyes too. Honestly, if you go through my article online on Russell Street Report, you'll see there's an awful lot of positive grades in terms of expectation. And not everybody can have a bigger role than they did last year, but some of that is the defense in general, I think, might be better. And it's very exciting to watch. It was a lot of people get hung up on the fact that the Rams sat most of their starters, and that had something to do. It was nice to see Flacco have a big drive, carve up their defense pretty easily. One of the things that was nice about it was they had ample time and space on every play. Now, I know we're going to get into this the next time, but basically, despite the fact that the offense moved right down the field the first couple of drives, the Ravens' depth really piled on the Rams as the game wore on, and that was really evident. So Very good game all around. And while the ones versus the twos did well on that first drive, and then Jackson came in and did well. It was nice team effort all the way through the roster.
Sure, preseason football is always tough to judge because the matchups are not the same. It's not all ones versus ones for the entire game. And especially this year is weird when this is the second preseason game the Ravens have had, yet the first time the Rams have put guys on the field.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that's exactly what it kind of came down to. And I was proud of the Ravens' depth. I was happy with the way they played. It was nice to see. We won't again talk about it in this show, but Rashad Perriman coming on the field late and making a real impact against some of the Rams' later players as well. So, good game. I'm eager to talk about this defense and how they absolutely harassed the hell out of the Rams in this one.
All right, so let's get to the defense. We talked about it after the Hall of Fame game about Martindale's defense was kind of just bland, and we didn't really see anything. There was no dime. We definitely saw the dime on Thursday night.
Yeah, so it was really nice to see, and I get excited as soon as I see it. But the very first third down, they had a third and five situation came up. And Anthony Levine runs on the field, and I'm saying, "Oh, Marine, it's a dime! Look!" And we're all excited about it, of course. And the very first snap of dime was actually a 6 yard conversion on third and five, and it was on a crossing route where Levine had coverage, and he was trailing on it. 6 yard completion. They converted first down, and that was actually 200% of their passing yards for the entire first half. Those 6 yards, they had three at the end of the first half. So that play was their success. And then after it, I just want to talk about what they did on third down for the rest of the half, because these snaps are almost all dime. There might have been one that was not. But the very next snap, Judon sacked Mannion for a loss of seven. Then the very next drive, Suggs hit Mannion from the blind side, had that sack fumble that went out of bounds for a 6 yard sack. Then Mannion threw incomplete short left. He was going for Pharaoh Cooper, but Levine actually had the coverage on the left sideline, and he had to throw the ball away. The next drive, Mannion again threw incomplete short left for Reynolds, and the Ravens unleashed one of their six-man rushes, and it was dime back Chuck Clark who generated the pressure up the A gap, so that was nice to see as well. Then a little later, Brent Urban bulled the right tackle for a quarterback hit. And Mannion overthrew a downed receiver. The people may remember this play because they'll remember Deshaun Elliott, like a center fielder, going back, 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 back to the warning track to try and catch the ball. But unfortunately, the ball fell incomplete, and despite a dive from Elliott and a narrow miss on an interception. And then on third and 20, the Rams finally just kind of gave in to the abuse they'd taken this first half, and they ran the ball for 7 yards rather than try and execute a pass play at with 1:35 left in the half. And that was the last we saw of the dime there. In the second half, Martindale put the dime in the closet again. They went back to this nickel for every play. But it was really nice to see him open the playbook. And even if it was only for seven snaps or so, to really generate some pressure off of these other sets, and including a bunch of six-man looks. And certainly was very effective and a very fun first half to watch.
Right. Did the stoppage of when he stopped using the dime, did that correlate with the first string guys coming off the field?
First string guys were already gone.
Okay.
Ravens were up 23-0 at the half when they stopped using the dime, and then they ended up winning 33-7 with it. So they still won the second half,
Right.
but they didn't win it, and they didn't bring out all their weapons.
Right. Well, again, yeah, they don't have the first string guys out there anymore. Of course, that's how preseason football goes. The end of the game, it's uglier football.
There you go.
So, all right.
Absolutely.
Well, let's get into some individual players then. We dealt with Martindale, and that we have something a little bit exciting to watch there. Let's go with some of the individual players. And the first guy that stood out was Anthony Everett.
So Averett again, cornerback from Alabama, and he's playing at right corner. You always are a little bit worried that an Alabama draft pick is going to be a little bit overdrafted with the Ravens because Ozzie's so
Right.
plugged in there. But I think he may have really found a value in Averett that he is a quick guy, seems to have good change of direction. He might even be able to play on the inside, but he's played exclusively on the outside so far. He hasn't played any slot corner with the Ravens. He slipped on one pass play, but he maintained enough of his balance that he was actually able to impede a running ball who caught a 2 yard running back who caught a 2 yard pass and allow Kenny Young to get the finish on that play. So that was good. He had stride for stride coverage of Thompson down the left sideline on a play that was very nice. Ball had to be thrown out of bounds, maybe intentionally, maybe just so his receiver was the only guy who could get it kind of thing, but the ball was out of bounds and incomplete. And then he had a pass defense on the very last defensive play of the game. So nice overall game for Averett. He strung two in a row together. And he's certainly going to make the roster and be part of Ravens' very deep corner depth. That was really never in doubt. But he's a guy now that's right in there with Marcus Kennedy as either the fourth or fifth corner on the team. And that is just so exciting, I can't even tell you, that one of those two guys is really the fourth or fifth corner, and it's not somebody who's pretty bad, like Shockey Brown maybe being your fourth or fifth corner.
Right, and so. Right, sure. And Maurice Kennedy, just going to him next, because he had that amazing interception where he went up for the ball.
Yeah, and that was the only time they threw at him the whole game. So he was in zone coverage. He was an underneath guy. He backpedaled a little bit, leapt, made the interception, and he did not allow a single completion in the game as I have it scored. Somebody else looking at it may say somebody was closer on some play, but he did not have a single completion allowed. So that's kind of like a perfect game for a cornerback when you intercept the only ball thrown your way. He had a kind of a mediocre debut against the Bears where he let a receiver get behind him in the end zone and he dropped the ball, fortunately, but didn't look nearly as good against the Bears as he did this week. And really good to see that because Kennedy's a corner that I'm hoping for big things on the outside after he had a very fine year at slot corner the second half last year.
Right. Speaking of that game with the Bears, you praised Correa a whole lot after that game for the best game you may have ever seen in a preseason game.
Yeah.
How did he do this week compared to that? It's hard to live up to that.
Yeah, you couldn't follow that performance up with a duplicate, or at least it would be very unlikely, I think. He had, I think it was the best game in Ravens preseason history this week. He had a game that neither improved nor set down his standings, but there were some troublesome individual things and there were some good individual things. So we want to talk about the good or the bad first.
Get the bad out of the way.
Let's get the bad out of the way. Okay. Difficult game against the run. He played three series at inside linebacker, and all the rest of his time on the outside. So his time against the run was not good. I have some specific plays that are mentioned in the article, but he's unable to get off a block from the center until he was 7 yards downfield. He actually made the tackle on that play, but he got pushed pretty well. Effectively as well. He also lost the left edge at outside linebacker to a wide receiver. That's a big no-no, but he got blocked by Farrow Cooper on the right edge on the 17-yard run right by Davis. So that was a Q2 1040 if you want to look at your DVR and check it out, or you can look at the article and then you can remember where it is without having to write that down.
All right.
Yeah, against the pass, you also want to know what he did well.
Yeah.
He had a couple of pass pressures himself, but he did something else that was really good. And these kind of things tend to go unnoticed. Zach Sealer had a 12-yard stunt sack or a twist, you could call it. He was going outside, and Correa had the underneath play on that. Now, oftentimes the underneath is kind of like a supporting role in a twist because he's trying to cross the face, in this case, of the left tackle, and get his shoulders turned. And he did exactly that. He got the left tackle's attention for long enough that Sealer was able to get around him and then have the left tackle off balance so he could push back with one hand, get the left tackle out of the way, and take down the quarterback for a 12-yard loss. But a really good supporting play there by Correa to set that up for Sealer.
Right, and that's the big thing, is it seemed that a lot of the guys on the defense were actually making plays and getting turnovers, getting sacks. Even Deshaun Elliott, the rookie that we've been looking at a little bit, he recovered a fumble.
Yeah, he's got a great nose for the football. I mean, the big thing I want to know is, can Deshaun Elliott be the free safety prospect the Ravens need after Eric Weddle is gone? So it's the hope. He's played a lot on the back end so far in this preseason. He's played a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage, but mostly on the back end. And even on that play, he was further back off the ball. The sack occurred, and two or three Ravens tried to scoop the ball unsuccessfully, and then he came flying in and dove on the ball, as any high school coach would tell you to do, but is right. Not necessarily the right thing to do. But anyway, he jumped on the ball and got the recovery there. He had a forced fumble last week, and then he also had that near interception as the center fielder on the overthrow that we mentioned earlier in this game. So yeah. Good nose for the football. I thought he had a decent game in coverage, nothing glaring. But when you play on the back end, and he and Chuck Clark did, and the opposing team only allows 3 yards in the first half, you deserve a share of credit, 3 passing yards. So right. Terrific game from Elliott again.
Yeah, no matter who you're playing against, whether it's first string, second string, third string, it's hard to keep him to that small of a number.
There you go.
Last season we saw Patrick Ricard on both sides of the ball. We saw that again this week where he scored a touchdown, but then he spent the rest of the game on defense.
Yeah, so did a bunch of things very well in this game. So first of all, let's talk about him on offense, because we may or may not hit that on the offensive podcast, because he's highlighted here in the defensive notes. But he caught a 6-yard out route for a touchdown, and that route was a very simple, what I call it, the Vontae Leach special, because Vontae Leach really only had one route he would run. He could run it to either sideline, so maybe he'd call it two routes, but he ran an out route where he went about 2 or 3 yards past the line of scrimmage at the most, and he was available as an outlet. That's exactly what Ricard ran on this play. He was actually right at the line of scrimmage, caught the ball, turned, and ran 6 yards for the touchdown unimpeded. Not that anyone was really going to get in front of him and tackle him at right. his size, but the outside guy was left in the dust on the play, and I don't even remember the number on that, but Ricard.
All right, but the point of that type of route with Ricard, or when it was Vontae Leach, is to just kind of give it to the big guy who can bull rush through for whatever yards.
Yeah, it's definitely intended to be a short outlet route to get something on a play where you got nothing. In this case, because you're in the red zone, you know, they say deception is everything there, and you really need to fool the other team on which receiver you're going to, and the Rams were certainly fooled. So the job was done on that route. But then that wasn't even his most interesting route. His most interesting route was the wheel route he ran later. And they didn't take time. It was a shame really talking about this. But to explain what a wheel route is to the listeners, it's a running back coming out of the backfield that normally takes a route up the sideline that is somewhat circuitous. It's looks like he's headed maybe just on an out route, and then he accelerates and goes up the sideline. Ricard ran that route. It was with Jackson in the game. They tried to throw the ball downfield and slightly overthrown. Would have been great to see a jump ball, but ashamed is not the right word, but I would have loved to hear Billick talk about that play, since he has a background as an offensive-minded coach.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. No, and that's something exciting to continue to watch with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's what he can do offensively is definitely it's a huge part of his game, but he might help the team by making the team and being that backup defensive lineman. And what he did in the second half definitely did not hurt his chances there. He was the dominant player in terms of controlling the line of scrimmage during that second half. So he all kinds of plays. Now, I want you to go in and look at the article for this, but basically he penetrated on every run play just about. He had a big hand in denying the 4th-and-1 stop by penetrating past the left guard Denby, actually bulled him, and then that created a gap where Alvin Jones could run in and make the tackle on Kelly for no gain on 4th-and-1. So that was a big play. He had a big pressure that blew. Okay, let me get to it exactly here. He had a pressure on the final drive. A penetration actually where he came in and blew up Holly for a loss of 1. He actually got past the left guard Cologne for a very fast QH on that final drive as well. So just play after play. I have 6 or 7 plays listed out there. Having a Patrick Ricard retrospective is a good thing. Good news came out yesterday that they got an email from the Ravens, and all PSL owners should have this, with free Game Pass subscription for the next year. So this is always a very exciting time of year for me, because I write my articles to be followed along by people who have Game Pass. So I give you those quarter and time references, and that allows you to go in and check the individual plays and see if you're seeing the play the same way I am. And the gives you a code, takes 2 minutes to set up, no longer than that, and you're in and you have Game Pass. I told people that on Twitter. A whole bunch of people didn't know they had this benefit as a season ticket holder. I'm guessing a lot of our listeners probably do. Hopefully more of them will take advantage of it this year and go look at that, because it's a lot of fun. It's very addictive once you get out there and have the ability to look at all these old games. They have all the games back to 2009, so if you want to go back and watch that wild card win against New England where Yanda pulled 19 times and connected on 15, you can do that. And the Ravens had all the turnovers, went up 24-0 in the first quarter. So lots of great historical football there to see, not just today's games.
Sure, sure. And I think the average season ticket holder probably doesn't understand what Game Pass is. Before doing this podcast, I heard of Game Pass. I knew Game Pass existed. I didn't really understand what it was and why I, as a Raven fan, would want to log into Game Pass.
Yeah, so it's all NFL games back to 2009, including the coach's film is there. The Ravens have paid for that. And the plays are indexed, so you can go in and you can see the individual play you want by picking it off the screen. You don't have to, you know, waste time like picking through a DVR to try and find a play that somebody's referring to or you want to look at. So it's very convenient in that way, and it's a very nice way. It's really the only way to watch film now with the NFL.
Right. It makes it so much easier. Can I, in there, view by player? So like Zach Sealer, we're going to get into next, he had only 12 snaps. Can I pull up Zach Sealer and see his 12 snaps? Or
you know, the email mentioned that there was a way to look at player snaps for when they were in. So it would be fantastic if it is. I haven't figured that part out yet, but I'll make that my project in time for the next podcast. Right. We can do that.
Or it might be something coming soon this year that they haven't opened up yet.
It could be.
So let's get to it. Let's get to Zach Sealer and his. Again, we're looking at this rookie, and he's not on the field a whole lot.
No, I mean, he only had 12 snaps this game, and he again had another big game. He beat a double team in one case to deliver a quarterback hit. That was just a very impressive play, by the way. Q3-5-17, if you want to go take a look at that. And then he had this sack where he showed something that you don't see from a rookie, which is just amazing strength to bull a left tackle with one hand, take a quarterback, and these are big men still. I mean, they're playing in the NFL. And take him down for a 12-yard stack without any hope of the guy getting away from him. He was bowled several yards on one run play, but it was just a terrific game for Sealer. What's interesting about this play is Sealer has a very good chance, I think, to be the best seventh-round pick the Ravens have ever had. And Michael Campanaro is probably it so far. So the bar is not set extremely high is what I'd say about that. But there's five reasons why I think he's likely to make the team. So for starters, he's Ozzie's last draft pick, but that's not the reason why I'll make the team. It's because he's a DaCosta guy with this small school pedigree. And if you see a small school draft pick, you know it's DaCosta. It's the organization that DaCosta built, and the way he likes to handle scouting is the reason they got that guy. Ozzie's much more about picking Big Five guys. Alabama players we obviously know, but the Big Five conferences are where a lot of Ozzie draft picks have come from. And DaCosta, when you see a small school pick, it's really got his fingerprints all over it.
Do you know where Ferris State is?
I think it's in Michigan. Didn't you look at it at one point for you?
I may have, but if so, I forgot. Yeah. I have no clue. So
yeah, maybe Grand Rapids or something.
Right,
or
it's definitely a small college, not an Aussie type pick.
No. It definitely smells like DaCosta. So that's reason number one. Number two. It's extraordinarily unusual for a rookie to be the strongest player on the team, but they announced on the broadcast that Sealer was the strongest Raven. And if you know, we all talk about offensive line players, we talk about this on the defensive line, that you know he needs a year in an NFL weight room. How often do we hear that? It's the most common objection for rookies to overcome playing on either side of the offensive, either side of the line.
Yes.
The Ravens have a replacement need coming up. Brent Urban will be an unrestricted free agent again after 2018. He was a UFA, but he had injury concerns, so he signed a one-year deal but with some incentives that was good for the club and good for Urban. I expect Urban to play very well this year. He's looked good so far in the games, and you know the Ravens have to make ready for life after Urban, and to have a player like Sealer, who will probably still be the backup with Wormley as the number one, will be a very solid five-tech position. So I like having having Sealer available for next year to be one of the good rotational guys there at the five. And also that would provide the Ravens with a very inexpensive position as well, because you have a third year guy and a second year guy sharing a position. It's ideal in terms of development and expense. Number four, he's playing at a very high level. He's played against lesser competition. He hasn't played a ton of snaps, but he's had two straight games where he's done extremely well. So can't argue with that. And then number five, and this is really important, is practically you cannot hide the guy on the practice squad. He's too good for that. And he's too NFL ready. So if you put him on the practice squad, he'll be scarfed up immediately. If you try to get him through waivers, they will either have to decide to IR the guy or have him play on the team this season. I think he ends up on the roster, not on IR.
All right. That's exciting for a rookie to come in like that. I want to ask you about one more specific player and then some more general questions. You mentioned earlier about the Alabama bias, or as you politically put it, that Ozzie Newsome is plugged in Alabama.
Yeah.
But Tim Williams, he had a great game on Thursday, and is he kind of what we expected coming out of Alabama last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the coach has made comments about that. I'm just going to go with my eyeball comments on the thing, but he has looked absolutely like he's playing at a different speed than the other players on the field. So, you know, to kind of calibrate this, if college has played at a five, and I always talk about the big jump to the NFL in terms of speed, and the NFL is an eight, and some of the NFL grocery baggers that he might have been playing against are playing at a six, Tim Williams is playing at a 10. I mean, he's faster than NFL players. He's faster than the grocery baggers. He's way faster than a college player. I've heard some things this week about him losing some weight. I'll just say the variety of pass rush moves he has and his ability to move quickly past someone are just extremely exciting in terms of how they can be used this year by Martindale. I think he's going to get a lot more snaps than he did. Last year, he had something like 115 snaps, if I recall correctly, a lot of deactivations. This year, he's playing more special teams, which will help. And I think as a situational pass rusher, I'd be looking at north of 350 pass rush snaps for Williams. And it's not just Williams' play as a pass rusher that's been impressive. In this game, he really played the run well. He controlled the side of the line of scrimmage he was on. He was good at controlling the edge. He did a good job of getting inside and pinching in on the ball carrier once he had that edge controlled. People will point to one missed tackle he had. It would have been a tough tackle anyway, but he missed a tackle at 5 yards on Kelly's 40-yard run. So if you want to have a balanced report about people, that was the one negative really from Tim Williams in this game. But otherwise, outstanding game. Four more pressure events, add to eight in the first game. He had the strip sack, of course, that everybody remembers, and just a terrific overall game of run defense, a guy who is an ascending star for the Ravens. And like I said, I'm expecting maybe 350-plus snaps for him this year as a rotational outside linebacker and the primary situational pass rusher I think the Ravens will use.
All right. That's great. All right. I've got a few questions for you. Then we'll get to your stars. Then we'll let the listeners get in their questions with the mailbag. First one is we talk a lot about preseason and guys being in shape. Who looks like they're in midseason form right now on the Ravens, on the defensive side?
In midseason form, the guy who I'm really happy about among the starters who's played well is Michael Pierce. He just penetrated across the line of scrimmage all night last night. And I know it was the number twos, but Pierce made him look like number two all right. And he was in that backfield all night making plays and all night for the, you know, probably dozen snaps that he played right, or so. And then, that was a terrific start. The outside linebackers look great, Judon and Suggs. Those are the guys among the starters who just thoroughly dominated the game while they were in there.
All right. Give me a sleeper pick, a guy that I might not have seen or noticed how well he's been doing.
Okay, a sleeper pick. Let me think about that for a minute. I'm going to go with Alvin Jones, the inside linebacker. I thought that he did a really good job exploiting the gap I mentioned that was created by Ricard. He's a natural gap shooter. He throws his body around, aggressively makes tackles. I think we might have mentioned him in last week's podcast as being a guy who could really be a good two-down run stuffer complement to a dime. So he plays the weak side inside linebacker role, or he can anyway. play the run extremely well, and then you'd replace him on third down with Levine or Clark in the dime and have a really good complementary set of players that's very inexpensive to play that second inside linebacker position.
All right. All right, final question. This one might be hard because I did start this this podcast with saying how, as the average fan, it looked like the defense, everyone played well. But give me some guys or team concerns. What should I be concerned about as a Ravens fan?
Right. So they did have some problems. They had a problem in general stopping the run. We mentioned it for Correa already. Bronson Kafusi had some problems on the outside as well in this game, even though he made one real highlight, real play over an 8-yard stop. He had problems holding the edge on his side as well. And they ended up giving up 121 yards on 25 carries, which is 4.8 yards per carry. And that's more than the Ravens would ever want to give up, of course. So gave up some big runs. That would be the team concern. They've got to get their edge-setting situation in gear. We've talked about this at times, but they have this enormous depth at outside linebacker, and yet they have really only Suggs and maybe Judon, we'll see how he does it, who are really setting the edge effectively. Tim Williams hopefully is moving into this group, but those two guys are the two who we trust to set the edge. And so those are the guys who, you know, Suggs you'd want to use as a pass rusher, and you need him for that, but you also need him as an edge setter. And so it really becomes difficult in how to apportion out his snaps to make the best use of him.
All right, so it's kind of a balancing act.
There you go.
So, all right, let's get to your stars of the game on the defensive side. I'm sure you had a bunch to pick from when they did really well this week.
Yeah, one-sided game like this, there was a lot to pick from. But I picked out three guys. Tim Williams, the clear number one star to me in a game like this, with the pressure events he had, with the playing the run effectively, the strip sack. I mean, he really did it all. In that first game, he had 8 pressures. He didn't convert anything into a sack, which was a shame, but he was in the backfield all night wreaking havoc. More of the same this week. Good run plays. He's the first star very easily. The second star, I would give to Patrick Ricard. Just absolutely controlled the line of scrimmage. And if you want to talk about anything not going well in the run game, it is not Patrick Ricard. That guy did everything he was supposed to in the run game. And honestly, it looks like he could save the roster spot for the Ravens if he could jump in there and take the nose tackle and fullback roles, and backup nose and fullback roles, and actually play some meaningful defensive snaps this year instead of just emergency snaps. So excited about his play. And then my third star is going to go to Anthony Averett. It's exciting to see that additional corner depth and Averett coming through. I could have given it to Maurice Kennedy, who had the interception, but Averett, because of his play over both games, I'm going to give him the nod on this and getting the third star for game two.
All right, awesome. Now it's time for Film Study Mailbag. Send in your questions on Twitter using the hashtag Film Study Mailbag, and then Ken can answer them for you. Sometimes he'll even answer them on Twitter before we even get to the podcast. But either way, we always cover it here. I've got one question, Ken, for you on the defensive side of the ball from Carl, who says, with so many D-line men and edge rushers performing well, who makes the 53? Who makes the practice squad? Who gets stashed to IR? Who gets traded? Who gets cut? You can't break all that down. But how do the Ravens handle this problem of looking pretty good on the defensive side of the ball?
Right. I mean, Carl, it's a great question. It's an entire show for us to do our roster thing. And we will do that, by the way, before this preseason ends. We'll have a roster prediction show to go through that. You know, injuries will play a large part in that, as they always do, that we'll see some injuries develop, obviously, that will make the choices for the Ravens. And there'll be some other surprising and suspicious injuries that come up that will allow some players to go to IR. I think that one of the really significant questions, if you're looking for a surprise cut, Brandon Carr, if the cornerback depth holds up, could be a guy they let go. And I think that Carl Davis of the fourth-year players is probably now on the bubble, given the exceptional play of Patrick Ricard and the desire of the team in all likelihood to save a spot on the defensive line. And Ravens are also going to be very challenged in making the decision between offense and defense. If they keep 3 quarterbacks, can they keep only 25 offensive players? So that's one of the questions they'll need to answer, Carl. And again, great question. We'll devote an entire show to it in the future, and we'll make sure we talk through all those issues on the defense in terms of individual positions and handicap the players one at a time in terms of who's likely to make it.
Right, right. All right. I don't think we mentioned enough that RussellStreetReport.com is where everyone should go. We are thankful that they are the host of this podcast, that they help release this each week. It's also where your write-ins are each week, Ken. You've got something up there right now on the defense where all this is broken down into written form, correct?
Yeah, and there's much more detail out there, including all the play quarter time references that allow you to go back to Game Pass. So I appreciate it if you take a look at that and read the writing there. The old articles are all there, and the old podcasts are there as well that Josh and I have done. And you can follow me on Twitter at Film Study Ravens as well. Josh, tell them about your show, 336.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Josh Soroka. My podcast is Section 336. You should just go in whatever your podcasting is and subscribe to it. It's a lot of fun. And you should check out section336.com because I'm focusing a lot more on blogging right now as we get through these struggling Oriole seasons and helping to explain to people what's going on, for instance, with Cedric Mullins coming up and Adam Jones moving to right field. I was amazed how many text messages I got from average fans saying, what's going on? So we help explain all that on the podcast and on section336.com. So, all right, Ken. Well, once again, thank you for doing your best to break down the defense and going through all of this for us. And we will talk again in a few days and break down the offense.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.